This is Audible.
The Sacred Band, written by Janet Morris and Chris Morris, narrated by Christopher Crosby Morris. 338 BCE, Chaeronea. Chapter 1. Cheating the Fates.
"Who are you?"
asked the sentry in a hushed tone, eye whites and teeth catching a quick spill of starlight down his helmet's thin nosepiece. On this deep blue night, nothing stirs but torches snapping in the camp beyond.
"Why are you here?"
"Critias, sacred band business," Crit replies, watching for a glimmer of light behind the Theban sentry, a fleeting gleam or deeper dark to show him the sword and shield of this man's partner. Never mind it. This is a pair's left side leader momentarily alone, awkwardly surprised, sidling rightward and feeling vulnerable on his open side.
"Whose sacred band? All ours are here with us."
Eye whites again. This sentry is searching for his partner, somewhere in the dark.
"Ours, the sacred band of stepsons." Crit's voice catches in his throat.
Behind him, Critias can hear his own squadron. Clink of harness, snort and hoofbeat. His sworn partner. 10 pairs of stepson cavalry. 1 hell-wheeled chariot from a foreign land, strangers all in this place called Chaeronea.
"What do you want?"
demands the sentry, wary, with danger all around. Tonight, this sentry's sacred band of thieves is 300 strong. Tomorrow they will be obliterated. Someday, under a statue of a lion, 254 of their skeletons will be recovered, and this sentry's dust will be there. Someday. Crit wished he didn't know it, but his commander had told him so.
"What do you want?"
the sentry repeats, too challenging, too suspicious. Impatient, ready to escalate, right hand on hilt and the other signaling his partner nearby, hidden in the dark. "Don't, boy. Draw that sword on your left hip now and everything changes for the worse. For you and all your brothers." Crit flexes his fingers but keeps both arms relaxed at his sides. His squadron at his back is more than warning enough.
"Our cadre, our sacred band, might fight beside you here,"
Crit answers calmly.
"Thousands wait across the valley looking to make an end to you. You could use some help."
In the morning, Macedonian forces shatter your front lines. Facing their long-speared phalanxes, your support troops desert, leaving your band to die alone. But I can't tell you that.
"My commander, Tempus, the Riddler, favorite of the Storm God, wants to speak with yours."
So Crit has just introduced a god into this conversation. Well and good. Forewarned might be forearmed for these Thebans, because the Storm God is here. Always is, wherever Tempus is. "Meddling from Enlil, Storm God of the armies. Too little, too late for these doomed fighters. Divine intervention? A small mercy? Perhaps. But only for some, not all.
Not many.
This sortie is a whim. The dark humor of his commander. A man the god immortalized. Catching up Crit's soul one more time along with everybody else's. The Riddler's hell-wheeled chariot starts rolling forward. Slowly, slowly, horses snorting. No threat imminent. Coming abreast at a jigging walk. Driving up on a wet wind rising, which flaps Crit's mantle around his calves. Tempus has waited long enough and wants now to make his presence felt.
"Right here, Crit," says the Riddler, a sighing shift of gravel in his softest voice, a gentle tone reserved for horses and the truly damned. Now the sentry's partner unwraps from gloom on his right and speaks so low Crit can't catch the words with the wind picking up and the chariot rattling. The second sentry goes running, greaves and leather squeaking, sandal slapping, clank of metal. Above, the blue-black sky starts to lose its milky road of glittering stars, clouds boiling up, building a danker dark.
What are we doing here? Trying to save the fated dead?
The nearest of Tempus's chariot horses is slobbering on Crit's right shoulder. Crit's partner, Stratton, grabs the team's rein from the other side. One of the blacks screams a challenge to some horse, somewhere, but doesn't raise its head. Crit knows what these Thebans see, these dead men to be. Keeping watch on their last sunrise to come, guesses how it seems to them when they peer into the chariot's car. Chariot and black horses such as none here have seen but on temple walls. His commander's massive strength at the reins with his right side partner standing by in that car forged by the Lord of Dream and Shadow. In a sacred band, the charioteer is always senior. The Thebans know who is who now. Gold rims glisten on chariot wheels, on ancient demons decorating the dream-forged car bearing the Riddler, called Tempus the Obscure, the Black, the Sleepless One. Keeper of all their fates, heroic in form, with eyes that can bring a man back from hell one more time. Tempus has Stealth, called Nicodemus, beside him, who's been to that hell and back how many times for the Riddler? A clean-limbed, balanced force Nico is Tempus's right-side partner and an avatar of the Storm God Enlil in his own right, if reluctantly. These two want to save 46 fighters from the sacred band of Thebes. 23 pairs whose skeletons won't lie under a stone lion for later men to find or poets to extol. Why? To staff a mission. And Critias, executive officer of the sacred band of stepsons, had agreed at the time. When it hadn't seemed so outrageous to interfere, to rescue paired fighters from a distant place and time where they are about to die, shoulder to shoulder, with honor just as their oath bond demands.
If the result is fixed, why fight at all?
Maybe these, someday missing, 23 Theban pairs just cut and ran. Made new lives, had children. Maybe they still would, still could. But Crit didn't think so. The sentry's partner comes back with a bigger, older man on a blowing war horse and a slighter man jogging beside. More doomed lovers of the god or goddess, if not of each other. Crit raises his right arm shoulder high, taking the left-hand chariot horse by the bit. This signal, on its own, brings up all the mounted sacred band of stepsons swathed in dark behind them. Good thing, with the wind getting up and the storm god of heaven about to make a statement of his own. Crit felt better with the stepson's horses up around him, although his partner, Stratton, rode a horse resurrected by a witch. Considering so many ghosts to be, the single ghost horse of the stepsons troubled Crit less tonight. The Theban commander, or the man they sent to parley, rides up close, stout little war horse between his knees. They must know their doom, this sacred band of lovers. They'd won a lot, triumphed. 10-1, some said. 3-1, for certain. They'd made Thebes great, a mighty power. But this next battle will be their last. Any reconnaissance could tell you what awaited on the morning. Lots. You didn't even need to be able to count that high when faced with thousands of enemies a valley away, and more behind them. Lots and lots. Tempest said to that doomed man in a voice like gravel coursing downhill, "You speak for them, all of yours?" "I do. Theagenes." No title, no rank, no need for all that now. This Theban's helmet was fierce, crested, almond-eyed, lips and chin showing through a narrow vertical slit. Theagenes' mantle blew over his horse's croup in the rising wind. You couldn't see what he thought of that chariot from hell, but the crouched way he sat his horse and urged it forward, motioning his partner to stay back, told Crit the message was received. "You wanted me?" the Theban asks the Riddler. "I did. I do. Tempus." His commander's voice growled deep in his throat, acknowledging the deadly situation. But not defeat. The Riddler was trying to save something, where precious little could be saved. "Our storm god Enlil says you can use a little help, and your goddess Harmony agrees." That brought the helmeted Theagenes on his scrappy horse up so close Critias could judge the breathing of the other man, deep and cautious. This leader of this other sacred band of soon-to-be-dead. "If the gods sent you to fight here, then the gods are fools," says Theagenes, words very soft, just a rasp, that won't carry, careful not to dishearten his men behind. "What's the price for this help? There always is one." "The price," softer still, the Riddler answers. "You'll lose all your pairs tomorrow, every one." He snaps his reins. The chariot horses with Crit and Strat in tow move closer to the Theban. One step, two, and halt. "Then why are you here? We don't need help counting. You came to tell me this, Tempus, Riddler, whoever. What's the point?" "The point is life. Let me spare 23 pairs of yours destined to die on tomorrow's battle plain, and all my sacred band will stay and fight beside you till the end. And I, myself, and mine."
and what price there is for that, you and yours will not pay it."
Tempus's head inclined to his partner almost imperceptibly. Nicodemus, motionless, attentive beside him like a ready falcon or a hunting dog. "I've 11 pairs here of mine and this chariot. I promise it's enough for what's in store. We'll see to all the rites as you want them. And some will be left who remember. I'll take 23 pairs of yours away with me."
"Take them where? Not to the fields of Elysian, from the luck of you. To Hades? They can get there on their own, it seems, directly." "Not to safety, you know better, but to a chance at life, to fight on other days, to carry on."
From the rear, in the midst of the sacred band of stepsons at the worst possible moment, a boy of theirs pushes his horse through the waiting cavalry, making riders move and mounts clarion and challenge. Nicodemus beside Tempus shifts in the car and motions sharply. "Be still." Someone back there stopped the youthful stepson before he intruded where boys had no right to be. Crit heard a thump, then stillness in the ranks. Discipline snapped tight again.
"To carry on,"
the Agenese repeated, disbelieving, ready for death, inured to hope. Before Tempest can reply, the storm god has his say and lightning flares sky-wide. Thunder breaks loose above, clouds blocking the road to heaven that had shined softly in the stars. There's almost no time between blinding white slashing of the sky and thunderclap. Horses squeal and neigh. In the bright sheet lightning, men and horses moving slowly are revealed, coming up softly, not quite sneaking, from the other sacred band's tents, leather wraps upon their horses' hooves. This tactic didn't affront Critias, he would have done the same. Survival has its own etiquette. And what do the Theban hoplites see in this extended rending of the sky, this white, bright glory of Enlil's lightning? The future, but not theirs. Paired cavalry fighters, formed ranks of armored death, grim men on their tall horses with lightning-limbing weapons tailored to the task. Men spoiling for a fight if the gods allowed. The sacred band of stepsons, out from shadows and the dark. So it could go another way, yet. Crit whistles his unit to readiness, but doubts the need. Everybody knows the danger here. None underestimates his peril. Horses shy in the brilliant light. Never had so many of his been so spooked by so little. Then the dark resumes its hegemony over them all. It would be a relief to fight against rather than beside this other sacred band, doomed to the man in any case, just to break the tension. But that isn't what the Riddler wants, or what the Storm God of the Armies wants, or what Nico's Mat, his mystery of balance and justice, wants. Or we wouldn't be here now. Was all this really just about putting together a new sacred squadron, a band to send down to Sanctuary? A thieves' world where none of the veteran stepsons would willingly return? To Sanctuary,
where the gods themselves had said the band had done enough and relieved them of their service there? Critias hated Sanctuary more than any place he'd ever been. But now they had young warriors who needed seasoning, some with blood hot for vengeance and some with the blood of gods in their veins, some with kin in that hellhole called Sanctuary, which was like calling a witch a priest. Sanctuary would train these boys like no place else could. And Tempest had never said they were done there. Now Tempest waits and watches, unhelmeted, just staring back at Theagenes with those long, slitted eyes. Not responding to Theagenes' "to carry on" words, repeated for clarification by a man locked in the confounding gaze of Crit's commander. Crit was neither witch nor priest, not god-bound or, he hoped, god-damned. He was unmagical, at best unflappable even in the face of Tempest or the unknown. But this mission froze his tongue and made his breath come fast. Crit was just a soldier. He couldn't figure odds when dicing with the gods. He held on to the lead horse's bit and its outside rein with one hand and his short sword's pommel with the other and waited to see what this Theban sacred band would do. The gods themselves were in this, up to their high-handed tricks, or Lord Storm's lightning and thunder wouldn't come illuminating this camp like a fate day, when the doomed fighters in those tents ought to be getting a good night's sleep, not sneaking up through the dark, rousted and ready. "Not to safety," the Riddler finally says once more. "To fight on other days, to carry on." Then this Theagenes sighs. "Not to safety, for harmony. Wanting neither too much to live nor too much to die. Their code, this strange sacred band, not sworn to a tutelary god such as Enlil, but to a goddess, harmony. More like Nikos, Mut." And Tempest speaks then, words from deep inside. "As the gods decree." Now Theagenes repeats what the Riddler has offered. "But to fight on other days, to carry on, that I can accept for them." "And gladly," agrees this man who knows the coming dawn will be his last. If Crit weren't so nervous that the Theban fighters ambling up might start a skirmish here tonight, he'd have wept for them. But here they came, this other sacred band, slipping through the night, so unconcernedly harmonious and quiet as they surrounded his stepsons, deploying left wing and right, before and behind, all wolfish and keen. "So just in time," the Riddler said, "done," and stepped down from the chariot's car to take Theagenes' hand. Blades snicked from scabbards behind Crit, spears hefted protectively, arrows knocked, and, above, thunder pealed like applause from heaven.
"Crit," said the Riddler over his shoulder, "Nico, you know what to do."
Somewhere in the night, a lone wolf howled and got an answer. End of chapter 1.
Chapter 2 Mercy from the Heavens.
So, Enlil, Lord of Storm and Bloodbath, how do you like this fight so far?
Tempest asked the god in his head and got no reply, but deep breathing and grunting like the fighters make where they fall. The battle is all around, though, and the god likes battle well enough that Tempest can barely keep his chariot and right-side partner in mind as Enlil looks down from heaven and out of his eyes, and everywhere is shrieking and bleeding and dark death hurtling through the skies as man tries something new and deadly against his brother. Arrows arcing, long spears thunking into flesh. Men stagger backward, impaled, screaming. War then and now, no difference. Here, today, the name and the work of the long spear is death. None can stand before it. Arrows whiz by his head. Nico jostles him, using his shield to protect Tempest, although the god will surely see to his servant. Sharp cavalry wedge breaks the Theban line. Long spears piercing, glittering in the sunlight. Men and horses screaming. Maneuvers carefully drilled, impossible to complete. Waves of death breaking on the Chironian plain, so many falling, piled one upon the other. Bloody mud so slick that horses skid and stumble, and his stepsons, bright stepsons in the thick of it. Cavalry, where such cavalry has never been before. Here, Macedonians try tactics on Thebans that will kill so many now, and multitudes more later, powering a war like none ever seen in all the days of man, and make a boy an emperor later. Is this what you, Lord Storm, really want? Is this what you, Enlil, Storm God of the Armies, want to see and see and see again? Again and again and want again and again? No answer from Enlil, God of the Battlefield. The god is too close today. His supernal mind bloody and full of dark purpose, rending and tearing away all but souls. The god is so high in him, hardly separate from him. A mind in his mind, strength beyond mortal comprehension. Celestial rage loosed. The man can't say now where Tempest ends and Enlil begins. Hoofbeats thundering, long spears thunking into flesh, men staggering backward, impaled, groaning. Maybe this time he has pushed the god too far, opened up too much, asked too much of a force that sees no difference between good and evil, right and wrong, but loves conflict and change and the steering of all things through all things by strife. War is all and king of all. Today, Tempest is perhaps more god than man, his humanity more submerged than it has ever been before, when the god takes his flesh and empowers it. It can't be helped. Or maybe it will be the help. Man here is learning a catechism about how to use a horse in battle and how to field fighters in a newer way. Infantry all around, the honorable dying in a multitude before the onslaught of the dishonorable. An object lesson the world does not soon forget.
when the great are taken down by the lowly, when artifice and infamy with no soul involved, just precision, routs brains and heart and honor. Glory wears a dreadful face today, as war takes a different turn. Long spear thunking into flesh. A youth staggers backward, impaled, whimpering. Spear pierces flesh between the nipples, mortal strike. Swords slash necks and arms. A shield-holding line drifts right, each protecting his open side. Too many open sides, too many. Sharp phalanx just being born. An unholy advantage, new and deadly, sparking strategies so much newer and deadlier still. The sacred band of Thebes, heroes all, are holding steady, each pair fielded intentionally, with the stronger bonded to the weaker, each pair tight together, while the enemy, so many, many, with gross force of numbers, overcomes their inspired battle. Sometimes not even inspiration is enough. Look to the souls of your own soldiers, God, who labor in thine awful cause. Tempest hasn't come here to lose lives. He's come to save them. In the press, wild eyes popping, dying breaths sigh from the mouths of men who have screamed their throats dry. He has no horse under him. No God-given advantage of man and horse becoming something more. But his sharp-bladed chariot wheels still take their toll, and the edges on the bladed axle cut deep like scythes as Nico beside him blocks arrows and knocks spears away with his shield, protecting them both with keen eye and steady arm. On a horse, Tempest's God-given speed transfers to his mount, but not through the reins or the car of a chariot. So time is slow for him, waiting for death to pick and choose his way across this foretold battlefield. Where today bravery loses the fight to guile, and civilization bows to brutality once again. Whooshing, clashing, ring and bellow, death is all around, and his right man, steady on, a dark, sick look in hazel eyes, stays in the chariot with him because this sacred band of Thebes needs all the help Tempest's fighters can provide, and more. While their own fight is drawing to a close against an enemy coming on like ants at a feast, unending. Long spears thunking into flesh, men staggering backward, impaled, moaning. Some of his stepsons have crossbows. These, too, an unfair advantage in this moment. But the least advantage his stepsons need, on such a dark day where courage is driven off the battlefield by the hordes of lust, while chaos reigns and righteous battle is punished and brought low by overwhelming force. Entrails are strewn everywhere, pieces of limbs glistening among them, blinded men crawl away. Theban sacred banders, crouched over slain partners, are holding out until the last. It won't be long now until the eerie quiet falls that signals victory for one, annihilation for the other. But it's not over yet. Now strife is here, bearing down with her awful mouth open wide, keening. fear follows, stinking her bowels loose and horrid. And death rides his own chariot, while slaughter and carnage flank him, shambling beside. Here panic reigns. Talk is impossible over the din. Time to go. Both reins in his left hand, Tempest touches Nico's shoulder. Nico's shield comes up and Nico half falls against him, trying to block a long, long spear from Tempest's gut, and succeeding. Beyond the remnant of the sacred band of Thebes, surrounded by his own sacred band of stepsons, a whirlwind is forming. His partner, Nico, sees it now as Tempest heads their chariot team that way. Stepson maneuver codes ring out, called by Critias, by Stratton, and by Nico when he can. The chariot, a tempting target, makes Tempest and Nico vulnerable. He wishes they had brought their mounts, unsure now that the chariot was a risk worth taking in this battle that is, for him, about saving 23 pairs of fighters, and about respect for the honored dead and the about to be dead. Supported by stepson cavalry, the surviving Thebans fight on, feet planted firmly on the earth. Theban past and future, ruined together, are ending together. Enemies stream toward them, a constant onslaught, unstoppable, insurmountable. Long spears thunking into flesh, men staggering backward, impaled, groaning. Innovation, all the difference today. The stepsons form up, trying to herd the pairs of Thebans to safety, toward the whirlwind on the banks of the river Cephisus. Their goddess, Harmony, rises up beside them, touches Thebans with her soft hand, and the remaining Thebans argue in the midst of battle. Now, despite all, so few of them will leave. Tempest sees his own youngest stepsons, callow youths with the fire of battle lust in their eyes, just blooded. Slashed and speared youth gets up to throw itself again into the fray. Why? Always pushing their limits, testing their courage, judging their mettle. For the look in the eyes of their comrades, for the black stare in the eyes of their enemies once life has fled. Don't stare too long in the eyes of the newly dead young fighters, Thebans and my own. Was this the right choice, or only one more horrific moment in the annals of wrong? Tempest has his sword, God-given, and it glows with sanctification of his battle. He strikes whenever he can, leaning out long and low against this craven enemy who deserves no better than a slit belly. Time to think about what was done, while entrails slowly spill. But few come near this chariot, the arm-long blades on its axle twisting and cutting everything as wheels spin fast and his short sword, susurrusing, and his God-given speed make the chariot too costly a target here and now. Long spear, thunking into flesh, another man staggers backward, impaled, sobbing. With hand sign he indicates to Nico where they need to go. Bleeding from arms and legs, kicking spear points and broken arrows and a few mangled limbs from the car, his stepson passes on those orders. Now the portal to another place is open for the sacred bands, and his men are closing ranks. They drilled this 20, 50 times. Stratton has the ghost horse, impervious to all, and guards the portal with the bay who can't die or bleed, and who takes exception to anything and all that might harm its rider. It would be easier from the look of it, because there was no talking in the dying and wailing and clatter of weapons and prayers called out to heaven from so many throats, to rid the field of enemies than to get those Thebans to break their ranks, even for salvation.
So be it. Who would come would come. He gave the signal, and Critias, with a flash of contorted face and devotion to duty beyond what any could ask, was trying to reason with the remnants of the sacred band of Thebes. There are so few Thebans left alive, fathers and sons, paired brothers and lovers and friends. So many more dead. Such a muddle of still flesh and blood with that forgotten look that bodies have when life has fled. One with so many arrows in him, he looks like a porcupine. One man's head, detached, wears a wistful look as it stares at the sky. Tempest sees a few men go through the portal into safety, into a shimmering in the whirlwind that swallows men and horses whole. He sees the Theban sacred banders seeded him by providence. Honest men, principled and brave beyond need and even what the gods require. Mutt and justice allow only so much. Only so many favors can be had from the all-knowing gods. He couldn't save them all, or history itself would be embattled. He had a few. He and Enlil had wheedled a few from the pitiless fates. A bit of mercy from the heavens. It must be enough. He caught Crit's imploring gaze, nodded, stretched out his arm and pointed, and took a spear in the chest that Nico hadn't seen coming. Dark and deep pain. Long spear, thunking into flesh, man staggering backward, impaled. This spear goes where it can do the most harm, aimed by an arm and an eye that knows just where to strike and how to strike. It touches his heart. He feels the cold. Then, despite his God-given speed and Enlil's grace, strength is fleeing. Nicodemus pushes him down into the car and stands over him, grabbing the reins and his sword before he drops it. "So, God of war and bloodbath, where art thou today? Whose side do you fight on, Lord Storm? On the side of might or on the side of right?" For both sides were on the battle plain this day, and the god, rustling inside him, doesn't say a word, but looks and looks and at length makes clouds to darken the day and to take him away, and his away. Red and black cover him, and a deeper, more abiding cold. When he woke, when consciousness rushed back in a blinding flash, it was as they pulled the spearhead out.
"Where?" he croaked, gritting it to mask his pain. "Safe rest, Riddler."
He heard Nico's voice was very low.
"How many lost and found?"
He wanted to know, asking questions of the grainy dark. He would heal. He always did.
"None lost of ours, yet. Found of theirs, enough."
Stealth called to Nicodemus has iron in his voice. Tempest would be protected, better shielded from whatever the stepson thought threatening, if love could heal and save.
"We have to go back to their rites," Tempest croaked.
He had made a solemn promise. His word is binding. He tried to sit up, fell back. Weakness was unaccustomed. Strange, because the god was in him, yet. Just a rustling, but truly there.
Riddler, it's taken care of. Rest a while, he heard Critias, near at hand, who always handled everything thrown at him.
Make a light.
It's not dark in here, Riddler. Bright as the god's eye, Stratton said, with an empathy that chilled him. They were all using his war name, when the danger should be past.
Ace, keep shut,
Nico whispered urgently to Stratton.
Why can't I see?
Commander, we don't know, Stealth said. It will pass. Where and how his fighters were, his right-side partner's tone said, was not his problem, not just now. End of chapter 2. Chapter 3. Blink of the God's Eye. A man as angry as Nicodemus was in the aftermath of the Theban rescue gone awry didn't belong among the civilized. And the island of Lemuria was the most civilized place Nico had ever been. A city-state with towering citadel, power unchallengeable behind its sheer seaside walls. Nicodemus was a secular adept of the Bandaran mystery of Mott, of transcendent perception, equilibrium, and mystic calm. He was failing himself and all Mott's precepts if he lost control of his temper, of his balance, or his heart. So once back safe, if not sound, on New Year's Day in Lemuria, he quietly ordered the Sacred Band of Stepsons and the new Theban Sacred Band, all 23 pairs, to make ready for an unspecified sortie as soon as they were fit to fight. Seeing hell in his eyes and muscles jump in his angular jaw, his flesh wounds unbandaged and scabbing up willy-nilly, stepsons went scurrying through the whitewashed barracks and the town below, preparing for they knew not what. Meanwhile, Nico chased after his temper, trying to get it under control. But he couldn't catch it. There was too much unrest in his soul. Now nearly all knew he was planning a mission. He didn't tell them where, but Crit knew where. Had to know. And Stratton knew. Soon Simmy, the free agent, the Riddler's woman who ruled as evening star in timeless Lemuria, must be told that he was taking the Sacred Band to Sanctuary. This was the foray the Riddler intended, after all. When Nico had briefed Critias and Stratton, they'd stared at him in disbelief. But they would implement his orders. He was the Riddler's right-side partner. His word bound the band like law while their commander lay abed. Ignoring deeper wounds, his own, his seasoned fighters, that needed tending, he called the three youngest stepsons out of their barracks and told them they were lucky to be alive, dressing them down savagely for not holding steady in the ranks. Their eyes wide and shocky, their faces cut and bruised, their hands trembling, told him they'd learned something on the Kyrenian battle plane. What they'd learned was nowhere near enough. These three Bandaran-trained youths were his responsibility. He couldn't leave them to their own devices. He'd sponsored them,
first on Bandera with the secular adepts, and now in Tempest's sacred band. So he got his best horse, and he drilled the trainees on the practice field until the sun set, and had the veteran, Gale, take over from him then. All night long, he told his broad and sturdy stepson, once a third commando fighter and among his most studied masters of the crueler arts, until they drop in their tracks, and tomorrow all day long, I want them disciplined. And he left, wishing he could find something to hack to pieces. Then he had to face the Riddler's woman up at Pinnacle House in that uncanny palace of hers with indoor trees and arcane windows to take you anywhere in the blink of a god's eye. Up he went as the sun was setting, a supplicant on a pilgrimage, seeking absolution in that vast and vaulted hall of glass and stone, where multicolored streamers hung from rafters, tattered standards from forgotten wars. His own cowardice shamed him. He should have come here sooner. Simmy would have all their hides for bedspreads. But Stealth, called Nicodemus, had a rage in him so deep he'd spent years in the misty isles of Bandera, trying to tame it. Now it was loose, anger aimed at the gods themselves. He'd had to wait until he could trust himself with Simmy. They were never easy with each other. She'd almost seduced him once. He couldn't trust her. Her relations with his left-side leader were beyond his ken. "I'm here to see the evening star," he said, when a jowly servant with black dogs on either side opened up the huge oak doors. "Come in, Lord Nicodemus," the man bid him. They all knew he'd wed a princess years ago and was royalty in his own right. If he cared to return to the city at the edge of time, he didn't care if he ever went back there. Those were other days, other hurts that fed his anger, but none as deep as these today. How was he going to tell Simmy how badly he'd failed? What a botch he'd made of this mission of mercy that Tempest had decreed. Nico was led by the padding servant and the dogs through marble halls, all red and black and white, to her sanctum. Simmy was the Riddler's sister, some said. A gray-eyed beauty, her black hair silvered, wearing silk and leather and a look on her diamond-shaped face as if she'd seen a ghost. Ageless, Simmy was, as long as he'd known her, as they all were here, while in the Muria's embrace. She seemed 30. He'd heard she was far beyond 300 years of age. She had a deeper beauty than mortals do, a fabled power, and a voice always full of seduction, always. Always, but not today. She knew at first glance that something was very wrong. Perhaps she sensed his misery, or she'd heard whispers. She was braced and guarded.
"What is it, Nico?"
Voice too sharp, edgy. She looked him up and down and found him wanting. Three huge black dogs milled around her feet. Some said
They changed to humans when she chose. What happened?
So he had to own to it. He squared his shoulders and sucked in a breath. As she came up close, he bowed his head to look into those gray eyes his commander loved so well.
We fouled up. I did. He got hurt. Badly, maybe. And the god is not helping him today.
She said nothing, but ran full tilt past him down the hall like a sprite or a goddess bent on vengeance. She'd know where Nico would have put him. He had to run after her, and he never caught her till they got to where the Riddler lay. When they reached the stepson's billet, everyone was there who had no incapacitating wounds or pressing duties. Even a couple of Thebans waited, walking wounded in kirtles and mantles, hair shorn, alike as father and son, eyes so full of loss they barely noticed what they saw, helmets under their arms. Stepsons saw Simmy, then Nico, come running and parted the crowd for them, squinting at them as if from 100 miles away. No one talked. All stood back. It wasn't a good day, everybody knew. He tried to guide Simmy to the sick room. She shook him off, a sharp, dismissive shrug. Inside, Strat and Crit sat on the Riddler's either side with a bucket full of bloody rags and murder in their eyes. Whitewashed walls seemed too close. The simple bed of his commander's office cell too hard. Tempest just lay there, unseeing, a wound bubbling in his chest that should be mortal, but wasn't yet. Nico clutches that hope like his dream-forged sword. Simmy pulled 2 rods down from her hair and it tumbled around her face. Even Nico stepped back involuntarily.
All 3 stepsons in this room know what those diamond rods can do.
Suck your soul, suck your life, and leave you empty, lost, or worse. What else they did was between her and the powers that she served.
Well, Simmy said, still at the foot of the Riddler's sick bed, diamond rods in fists on either hip. Now you've done it, haven't you, all you fools?
Tempest, can you hear me?
Life to you, Simmy, said the Riddler from his bed. And everlasting glory. He smiled his humorless kill smile, just a tightening at the corners of his mouth. The last thing Simmy would do was acknowledge the sacred band greeting.
Get out of here, stepsons, I'll see to him. You 3 have done quite enough today. All of you, and your feckless, treacherous god.
And with that, she banished them. Nico hoped this banishment was not forever, but who could say? The last thing he saw was Simmy striding to the bed. The last thing he heard was Tempest's voice rattling deep in his chest, saying,
Sister, don't bait the god today.
So we're still going. Tomorrow. With the Riddler or without him, Nico told Critias and Stratton 3 days later, out by the bullpen where stepsons worked their horses in the bright morning light.
The sea wind was gentle. The sky was